Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. And oh, these are ever-changing times, and we are so thrilled to have on the phone with us Dr. Rick Spacuzza. He is the superintendent of schools for the Prescott School District, and he has some breaking news to tell us. He has some updates to give us, and we're just always so thrilled when he calls in. How have you been?
I am holding up, and I just wanted to thank you for the offer to be on KDWA and also to our listeners out there. Always a privilege to be able to get the message out about the good work that's happening at Prescott Public Schools.
Oh, well, you certainly hear a lot of good things going on in Prescott, and so we're thrilled to be able to help in that regard. So thank you for saying that. First of all, an update, obviously. You are moving to a different instructional delivery model. You're having a little shift. Tell us about that.
Yes, and for people that are on both sides of the border, the different states have different criteria and different rules, but we have been trying to follow basically kind of the number of incidents of COVID, and both in Minnesota and Wisconsin, you've seen a huge rapid increase. So a week ago, we did move our middle school, grades 6 through 8, to be 100% virtual, and those students are 5 days a week virtual at home, and the instructional day is from 9 o'clock to 1:45, with additional opportunities to either to do special work with teachers or reach out in the periods from 2 to 3:30 when school usually ends. We did have to make an adjustment also for our Prescott High School. They currently were virtual. We are on a trimester. Students are finishing up the end of their trimester exams, and then they have Thanksgiving break. We are going to bring them back for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week as they pivot into trimester two. And the reason for that is so that we can exchange books, make sure that they see and meet their second try teachers face-to-face. But starting December 3rd, we will move our high school, just like our middle school, to be 100% virtual 5 days a week. We are looking to continue that through and up to January 11th, where we are going to reassess both our ability to staff appropriately and health-wise, our secondary schools, and also the health of our students. If we feel that both sides, both our staff and students, are healthy enough and we have enough personnel, we would then come back to the hybrid model. So we had to announce that the other day. That has gone well. I really appreciate both our community but also our families for understanding these tough decisions. It is also made with a balance of trying to maintain our elementary schools, K-5, to be open, and we still are open K-5 face-to-face. This will allow us to move additional teachers, our subpool, which is very thin, and I think it's thin in many districts throughout the country, is to make sure that we have as many people and healthy people available to meet our students every day. We know each shift in our instructional model is disruptive to students and families, but we knew that K-5 would be the most disruptive because obviously they need direct supervision. So we're trying to mitigate that as much as we can, and I appreciate both the support of the school board, our staff for making these shifts and understanding, and just the communication that we've been able to have with our community about these instructional shifts.
January 11th is when you will be going back after, is it Christmas break?
So be after winter break. So we would still have, you know, obviously learning resumes on January 4th in a virtual way.
Okay.
With students off campus. And we hope that first week to be able to take a quick pulse or measurement on staffing, and we would announce the instructional model for January 11th and beyond. So we're targeting that we hope we can come back into a hybrid model where students are on site 2 days a week, but since it's going to be after a Thanksgiving and also a winter holiday, and I know that people get together and there's still a high rate of COVID contagion in the area, that it could be that we may have to delay that. And so that's what our letters and communication has been, is that it's ever fluid, and here are some of the things that we're monitoring. We do know that having students on site is the better of the models, but when health is an issue, we will have to go virtual.
So how does that work? Are your teachers then Zooming, or is there something across the board that's uniform for all the kids?
Really good question. For the secondary students, it's probably been a little bit easier transition compared to March last year, and that is that our students, were coming on site 2 days a week where they were receiving face-to-face instruction with their teacher. The other 50% of our population was on what we call Google Meets, and so it's kind of like Zoom where they can see the classroom, they can hear and see the instructor. We have a camera. And so they are, if I'm supposed to be in math class at 9 and biology at 10 and PE at 11, that's how I follow my day when I'm at home. And it allows our teachers to be able to kind of run the same instruction and keep kids on a progression. So from a learning standpoint, it's not just 2 days of instruction and you're losing 3 days. It's 5 days of instruction. Two of those days you're on site face-to-face where you obviously have a different experience than if you're at home. But we invested in a lot of technology with regards to cameras, microphones. So 6 through 12, those students have been able to access their teachers in real time. Our specialist programs like art, physical education, and some of the electives are what we refer to as asynchronous, or they're not happening in real time, but they have office hours with our teachers. We usually have either a project or a recording that they can access at their own time and place, but attendance is still taken 5 days a week, and it allows us to kind of continue to monitor our students, not only just for academic health, but we also are concerned about social-emotional health of our students and just the nutrition. So we do offer pickup service for our students for meals for breakfast and lunch. So it's a way of being able to kind of stay engage with families to the best we can during these difficult times.
You know, I think about the technology that is required to make all this work. And just like in Hastings, I know Prescott has quite a few areas that are remote. Is that a disability for a lot of people that they don't have the technology support they need, or how are kids doing?
That's an astute observation. We have done surveys in the fall. Our school district, we're blessed to have an incredible tech department. They've been able to kind of foresee some of the challenges that we would have. We've invested in additional hotspots for families. We went through our first pre-order, and so we've ordered additional hotspots. So that's basically if a family doesn't have Wi-Fi, they can. One of the challenges and downsides has been is that if you can't get a cell signal, and in some of our areas, because we are, I would say, 50% small town and 50% rural, there are some dead zones. So a couple things that we've done is that we have created Wi-Fi spots in all of our parking lots. We have made adjustments that students who are in special education, we are having those students on site, socially distanced, and being able to provide that programming because we have either technology or assisted technology or physical limitations. We also have added Wi-Fi into our main areas or lobbies, and as long as students come on site but stay socially distanced and are masked, they have an indoor space where they can also access Wi-Fi Monday through Friday. So we've made a lot of investments both in, we also are moving at our high school, 912, the shipment of one-to-one Chromebooks is arriving, and we will be starting to disseminate those out to our families in early December. Gives, again, additional technology for families that might have a student in multiple grades, just another resource or tool that they can access the classes that are being provided.
You know, it's not ideal, but it certainly sounds like you're trying to reach everybody, and that's just such a positive. How is staff doing? How are they holding up?
You know, I think it ebbs and flows. They have, I think that public education is difficult even in the best of times.
Right.
And there's been national surveys on that. I think that our board and our administrative team have been very supportive to me to make sure that we're making the adjustments where and when necessary. I can't remember if it last time I was on, we did make an adjustment that on Mondays for our K-5 students, we do have a 2-hour early release, and part of that was to give our teachers, it's hard to just deliver instruction when 100% of the students are on site. We do have families that made choices to start the year off campus, and then we do have students that are either close contacts or quarantined, so that we are allowing students to access our classroom. So our teachers are really doing teaching, but teaching kids right in front of them, but also students that might be at home. And that's difficult. That's a difficult skill. Mm-hmm. It takes a different type of preparation, just being able to monitor that. And so we've made adjustments in the giving our teachers 2 hours of dedicated time just to plan their lessons and follow up on what's working. We have hired a couple people that are just dealing with students that are off campus at the elementary, so that we're able to keep teachers at K-3 only focused on the students in front of them, and then we have two teachers that are developing the off-campus programming. And I think that was a shift that we had to do, so it was kind of in response to what we were seeing. Obviously, making kind of these decisions of at the secondary, where it was getting very hard to do kind of synchronous and asynchronous learning, and the number of people that were out, just to say, we're going to focus for the next 3 to 4 weeks on only one instructional model, which is off campus. So I think it's helped lighten a little bit of the stress. It doesn't eliminate it, because our teachers, also our parents, mm-hmm. our teachers are also people caring for older parents or adults, and also might be medically compromised. So the things that the community is concerned or worried about definitely come into the threshold of Prescott Public Schools. So those are the things that, you know, we continue to be supportive where we can be. We have information through our HR department and public assistance programs. And when we get good news, and, you know, every once in a while we have survey information or feedback from the community that we try to share with our staff, that we're in it together, and that how appreciative our families have been to date under these difficult situations.
You mentioned the board. I know you had a board meeting on November 18th, and you wanted to talk about the results of a community survey that you did.
Yes. So in the fall, we had commissioned School Perceptions, which is an organization out of Wisconsin that conducts surveys, and we did a community-wide survey, 100% of all addresses, home addresses within the Prescott school boundary received an invitation to participate in a survey. It could be done by mail or it could be done online. It was about a referendum, and usually they get about 16-18% response rate. They have been noticing, School Perceptions have been noticing, that response rates are a little bit higher during COVID, and I think we have a captive audience. We received over 802 responses. That was excellent from School Perceptions' perspective, so we feel like we have a good pulse of the community. There were some very informative takeaways. The first part of this survey was looking at whether or not Prescott Public Schools is achieving excellence, and over 70% of our community responded that they believe that the school board is acting in its best interest and that the work of the school board aligns with its mission. And that was something that we had just reinstituted or re-endorsed, if you will, a new mission statement this time last year. 3 out of 4 parents or community members identified that Prescott Public Schools provides rigorous and relevant curriculum. 3 out of 4 families identified, or community members identified, that we are creative and innovative in our educational programming. And our community was well over 80% stated that Prescott Public Schools is a welcoming and safe environment. So we were really proud of that. There was also a 5-point scale, and the community rated us a 4+. So that means that it was either 4 or a few 5s in there. And so that Prescott Public Schools prepares children academically, and that Prescott School District is financially responsible or fiscally responsible. So I think that was really good news. We had not done a survey in over 6 years. So given that we haven't been able to do a lot of face-to-face meetings with our community, this was helpful in one way to tap in on the pulse. The second part of the survey was with regards to, we had done work with an external architect to identify infrastructure needs. So just like a house, you know, your roof gets to be 20 years old and you have to replace it. Your boilers or your furnace gets old and you have to replace it. And so this community invested in Prescott Public Schools in a dramatic way to build that wonderful Performing Arts Center and new high school, which gave us a lot of opportunity for space. And what we were looking at is, with some of the new housing developments coming in, is what is the best configuration of our buildings and how do we make sure that they match and align with the way that we educate in the 21st century. So you and I just talked about online learning and using technology and collaborative space and innovation and creativity. So the way that education is delivered needs the spaces to be designed differently. So we did ask about whether or not there would be a tax tolerance of our community to invest in some of the remodeling and investment in the infrastructure that's a major need, and then to align with school board goals of providing a safe and secure front entrances for our students, and then some grade realignment. That information was reported to our school board on November 18th. I would say at this time, based on the economic picture and the community and concerns about COVID, I think there's a hesitancy maybe of our larger community to support overall a large ask, and I would say $16 million or above. We do have a work session scheduled for December 2nd, and that's going to be a time in which we'll look at probably whether or not we continue to educate our community about what our critical needs are and whether or not infrastructure are some of the things that, you know, you can't really delay replacing a roof too long before you have water infiltration and some challenges that we had with mold and spores at the middle school. So those are taken seriously with regards to, we want to make sure that we have healthy environments for our students, and also the HVAC and lighting. We'll come back and then discuss that at our board meeting on the 16th of December. So two big meetings coming up, December 2nd and the 16th, where we'll have the opportunity to debrief the survey findings and discuss what options may be available for the school board and the community.
Well, we really appreciate you telling us about all of this, and please keep us posted. Good luck to you at the Prescott Public Schools. We are so thrilled that you took the time. Dr. Rick Spacuzza, he's the superintendent of schools. Thank you so much. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.